from an empty prune silo in upstate New York. This is Here Be Monsters. You know, I think it's funny when we try to preserve things. I mean, don't get me wrong, I understand I just made a whole episode about trying to preserve things. But it's like kind of funny and sad, too, to try and take things that are ephemeral and keep them forever, because as you know by now, I think that something's always lost. I've got in front of me here, I've got most of a gallon of fruit punch. It's in a clear jug. It's a kind of like pinkish red tropical color. It's got a blue lid and it's mostly water and sugar, a bit of cherry juice and pineapple juice. Yeah. I honestly probably haven't had this stuff since I was a kid, but it tastes how I remember it tasting, which is red. It's just red and sweet, and every fruit punch I've ever drank in the world has been this same color of red. And, like, who thought of this? Like, why is it red? It's such a concoction. It's something that humans just made up, right? And something it makes me think of, actually, it sounds very disparate, but something it actually makes me think of is the story of the kilogram. And you say, okay, so what is a kilogram? Well, it's something that humans made up. And until very recently, the answer to what is a kilogram is it's a piece of metal in a jar in France. That is what a kilogram was until very recently. And every other kilogram in the world was based on it. That was the only true kilogram. It's like, okay, great. So every time you measure something, every time that you want to know how much something weighed in kilograms, you would measure it. And that would be a comparison that was being compared to a replica of a replica of a replica of a replica of the kilogram in France, right? Every other kilogram in the world was based on this singular kilogram. It was the only true one. And that was fine for a while until people realized that the kilogram was changing mass. It still weighed a kilogram, which is confusing, but because it was the only true kilogram, that's still what a kilogram was. It just wasn't the same weight it weighed yesterday, because the metal in the kilogram was slowly degrading over time. And this became a real problem because suddenly everyone's scales were off. So a couple years ago, some scientists got together and decided that was really bad. And they decided that kilograms should be defined mathematically instead of physically. So anyways, as far as I know, there's no mathematical definition of what fruit punch should be. But it is odd to me that we have these kind of definitions that we all agree on, like the fact that fruit punch should be red and should taste vaguely of pineapples. But that's based on something that's entirely ephemeral, like it will go away in time. You know, there's no way to know exactly what fruit punch tasted like 100 years ago because it just doesn't keep very well. And I mean, hell, like this fruit punch that I bought like a couple days ago, it says here on the jug that it's supposed to be drank less than a month from now. It's just another one of those things that you can't keep forever. So anyways, that's what's been keeping me up at night. What about you?
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
anti-nostalgia, if that's possible.
The podcast about the unknown.
The sponsor for this episode is Esoteric Bumper Stickers. Esoteric Bumper Stickers is a website that sells waterproof vinyl bumper stickers that fit any feeling. Like, I just bought the whale one, and it's a picture of a whale just being a whale. And then, in white letters, it just says, "Ask me about the briny deep." Honestly, I think it's probably the best $5.50 I've ever spent. I've also got my eye on the one with the moon crater, the one with the flowers on it. There's one called Claws in the Dark. But I got the whale one. I might put it on my file cabinet, or I might actually put it on a car. I've got an appointment to go look at buying a used car this weekend. And regardless of whether it's the car, the file cabinet, or somewhere else entirely, I'm not too worried, because it's going to wind up somewhere, because I love it. And I think you'll love Esoteric Bumper Stickers too. There's a link in our show notes, or you can just go to esotericbumperstickers.com. When was the first time you realized that you were going to be a chemist?
Junior year of high school, actually. I was coming out of my first big obsessive compulsive disorder event, and I started to learn about the brain and neurotransmitters as a way to understand what was going on. And through that, I was really drawn to the chemical structures and the ideas of this chemistry. So I was very interested on a biochemical standpoint. And then once the following year in school, I took chemistry, I just connected with the thought process behind it.
Can you give me the sales pitch on chemistry?
Yeah. The thing about chemistry is it's literally in everything around us. And we are made of atoms and molecules, and our brain and our neurons are atoms and molecules. But we have developed consciousness. So we are matter thinking about itself, matter made self-aware. It's matter learning about itself, and it's teaching other chunks of matter about themselves. Yeah, that's what gets me.
Yeah, it works. It worked on me just now, you know? Amanda, could you introduce yourself, you know, say your name and who you are?
Yeah, definitely. I am Amanda Petras. I am a chemistry professor at the Community College of Rhode Island, and I have delusions of being a Valkyrie.
What is it about Wagner?
His music has stunningly beautiful moments. It has very long, boring hours, but it has stunningly beautiful moments. And it's like he's caught the peaks and the troughs of the human experience and what the human soul is capable of. He was such an utter jerk. Like, he was anti-Semitic, misogynistic, he used people, he was very self-centered. And of course, he was way before the Nazi era, but there's the association that the Nazis picked up his ideology and took it very far. It fascinates me that someone so ugly could create such moments of beauty.
Do you have any memories of listening to Wagner?
Yeah, I do. A lot. The very first clear memory of Wagner was my junior year of high school. My chemistry professor lent me a vinyl recording of Parzival, which was his probably longest, slowest, most boring opera. But for some reason, it ended up being one of my favorites. I brought Parzival home, and I was so enamored that this teacher that I admired, like, lent me something, like, trusted me with this thing. And it was Christmas break, so the snow was coming down outside. So I heard that piece for the first time, and it was just phenomenal.
Thank you. When's the last time you poisoned someone?
I have never officially poisoned anyone.
When's the last time you were accused of poisoning someone?
The last time I was accused of poisoning someone was 2004, back in Western New York.
Tell me about Western New York. You know, it's the other side of the state, right?
Yes. The college that I went to, SUNY Fredonia, it was actually the furthest school in the SUNY system away from New York City. But you're almost to Ohio and Pennsylvania, and you're on Lake Erie. The lake is beautiful, but, you know, if you look too closely on the beach, you would see syringes and dead fish and, you know, nice things like that. But stunning cliffs, beautiful waves, and it's mostly farmland, but just great fields as far as the eye could see. And the smell just permeates the town. So if you're out driving and the windows are down, all you get is this magnificent grape smell, which I still loved even after working at the juice factory for a year. I still love that smell very fondly.
So how did you wind up working at a juice factory? Tell me the story of getting that job.
Right. My girlfriend at the time had found the advertisement, and it was for a quality control technician at a juice company in the next town over.
What does a juice factory look like?
The outside just looked like a giant metal warehouse type facility. And there were silos coming up out of the back with, you know, some of the juice concentrates in it. Very dark, very busy, very loud. It smelled obviously like fruits in, you know, juices. But on bad days, you'd get kind of a sewagey smell if they needed to flush out certain things. The smells could be a little overwhelming. Lots of metal grates and stairs and railings and giant metal tanks. You know, you'd walk through these 7,000-gallon tanks that just, like, towered up to the ceiling. No windows, so you felt very... It was almost like you were in some kind of hellish casino where you lost track of the time of day and you couldn't get out.
What was your job?
My job was a quality control technician. So there were people called the batchers that followed recipes and put the juice together. And when they thought they had 5,000 gallons of this brand of juice ready, they would bring us a sample and we would have to test it, compare it to the notes that we had on that brand, also compare it to a standard that we pulled from a juice library. It was a lot of juice paperwork, a lot of taste testing, and very repetitive. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what was the worst juice to work on?
Fruit punches were very hard because it was very hard to get the ratio of all the exotic fruits right, even though it was like less than 2% juice. And the coloring was very, very hard. You know, you get that nice hint of red dye. That has a very distinct taste to me.
What's the recipe for 5,000 gallons of fruit punch?
A very large percentage of that is going to be water. So at least probably 4,000 gallons plus is going to be water. So then you dump in your high fructose corn syrup and you're talking hundreds of gallons. So after your water, after your high fructose corn syrup, you're going to have less than 2% juice. So that's going to be a mixture of apple, pineapple, passion fruit, orange. On top of that, you might add purees. Usually apricot, papaya, and guava are going to go in. Vitamin C and citric acid would go in. Then you'd have your, quote, natural and artificial flavors. After that, there's pectin, which gets added as a thickening agent. After that, your last few ingredients are in the smallest amount. You're going to have your synthetic dyes that get dumped in. Fruit punch is usually one of the reds and one of the blues, so probably red 40 and blue 1. Some throw in something like sucralose, which is an artificial sugar. Then you've got preservatives at the end, which are usually like potassium sorbate and something like sodium metaphosphate. Yeah, there's a lot that goes into every batch of juice.
I want to know about the juice library. Mm-hmm. What was it and why did you have it?
So we had a juice library which contained samples of every brand that we made, every flavor, so that when we made a new batch, we could compare it to a standard and say, all right, this fruit punch looks the same, it tastes the same, we're good to go. And every time you successfully made a batch of juice, you grabbed a few bottles of it and you put it in the juice library. Now, the juice library was not as glamorous as it probably sounds.
I mean, I'm picturing a facial scan, fingerprint scan.
Yep.
Steaming doors open up, white walls everywhere, and just lines of perfect little bottles of punch just on the walls. That's it, right?
Yeah, dead on, yeah. No, it was actually an old utility closet that was not in use anymore. Old, like, rusty shelving. The tiles were peeling off the floor and the dark, dirty brick, you know, that kind of thing. So we would go into this little cave and grab the juice that we needed and scuttle back to our little lab, because you had to taste test every single juice. And once it was bottled, you then had to go out to the line and grab a couple bottles so that you could replenish the juice library.
I mean, that's the kind of the strangest part about it, right? Which is that you're constantly, because it is something that is consumed.
Yeah.
Is you have to constantly update the juice library, right?
Yep.
Were there subtle shifts that were taking place over time because you were always updating the standard?
There probably were, but I think generally a lot of those slight changes just scooted by unless there was a complaint from a customer. But I bet it's like watching a puppy grow up. You see it every day, so you don't see the changes that other people see. It's not as drastic.
Tell me about meeting Tim.
This was a very intense job for a few reasons. One of them was that it was third shift, so I worked 8 p.m. to 4 a.m., so it was very difficult for me to work nights. Also, it was 10 days on, 2 days off, and very fast-paced because they never shut the lines down. The other aspect of this was the colleagues. I was the only female of all the batchers making the juice, of the two technicians, of the manager. So it was definitely being like in a different world that I didn't quite know how to navigate. And I was definitely a strange creature. At that point in time, in that part of the world, there were not a lot of openly gay people. You know, this was early 2000s and it was still, you know, in blue collar areas, pretty taboo. Being relatively new to the world, I was definitely enlightened being put in a factory setting. And my other colleague, my counterpart, Tim, he was a very interesting person. He was good at his job. He was very good at it. He'd been doing it for a very long time. And he could sometimes look at a batch of juice and be like, oh, I know exactly what that needs. Put 3 pounds of guava puree in that, right? But he talked about sex a great deal. He, I think for a while, was flirting with me. And when he wasn't really getting much of a response, his tone changed a bit and he became more, I don't know the word. There were days where I was more stressed out by being with him than the ins and outs of the job. And sometimes I was a little worried about how angry he might get, you know? He never hurt me, you know, but there were definitely days where I would sit in the parking lot before my shift and just cry and get that out, and then pull myself together, get my shift done, and get out of there. Yeah.
How did you wind up getting accused of poisoning the juice?
That was a very confusing incident. I had finally put together my graduate school applications, and I had been accepted to Syracuse University. So I put my notice in. I actually kind of naively gave them 3 months notice. You know, I said, want to give you a lot of time, but you know, I won't be working here in 3 months. So that exact day I was escorted from the plant, and it also coincided, you know, my colleague, Tim, had a lot of interesting theories on the world, and he had gotten very ill at work, and he had decided that I had done something to make him ill. And he explained his thought process to me in a very angry rant. He said, grown men don't shit themselves. Therefore, someone must have poisoned me. He heard that Visine eye drops have a laxative effect, and he figured that because I was a chemist, I would know that. And I must have taken first shift's eye drops and put them in his food somehow to make him shit himself. And he went to management with this complaint. So I was escorted from the plant, and that was my last experience in the juice factory. It was traumatic, and then kind of like a Band-Aid being ripped off, I was free, so. It was actually a point in my life that I used as reference for most of the rest of my young adult life. It motivated me to really figure out the next step. And then once I got to graduate school, it actually gave me some stamina, both physically and emotionally, to get through the graduate program. And that was always a marker for me, you know? I was like, well, at least I'm not at the juice company.
You know, back when you were my upstairs neighbor, right? I think we were sitting out in the backyard once, and offhand, you said something to the effect of, my goals in life have always been to be a chemist, to have a bunch of cats, and marry a woman. I've done all three of those things.
Yeah.
And so I'm doing all right in my life. Is that an accurate quote?
Yeah, that is absolutely, actually. Sometimes I stop and I think, if 21-year-old me could see where, you know, almost 40-year-old me is now, I'd love to be able to tell her, you're not always going to be this lost, you know?
Do you ever miss juice life?
I do not miss juice life. There's no nostalgia whatsoever. Anti-nostalgia, if that's possible.
Amanda Petras is a chemistry professor at the Community College of Rhode Island. She also runs a company called Mail from a Cat, where you can get mail from a cat. I actually love mail from a cat, and I use it sometimes to mail birthday postcards to my friends and family. It's mailfromacat.com. The music on this episode came from The Black Spot, Cirocell, and from performances of Wagner's work. And you can find links to the individual performances in this episode on our website, which is hbmpodcast.com. My name is Jeff Entman, and I produce this episode of Here Be Monsters, which is a podcast that I've been doing for about 9 years now. It's independent. which means that it's supported by individual sponsors and donors. And if you would like to become a donor, you can do that at patreon.com/HBM podcast. So thank you. And thanks for listening. More episodes soon.